People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Fine Music Radio and Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now we're going to be talking about the Waterfront Theatre School presentation of Spring Awakening, the musical, which is taking place here at the Artscape Arena from the 10th to the 20th of July. Now this multi-award winning production is based on the 1891 play by Frank Wedekind, telling the story of teenagers discovering the inner and outer tumult of teenage sexuality. It's touted as a celebration of rebellion. And it's also described as illuminating and unforgettable, an electrifying fusion of morality, sexuality, and rock and roll. Makes it sound quite irresistible, actually. With me in the studio is the founder and managing director of the Waterfront Theatre School, Delia Sainsbury. Delia, it's so nice to have you here. Whenever I think of you, I think of you on television for years and years on end.
Yes, years and years and years and years on end.
It was a long time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
When did you open the Waterfront Theatre School?
This is our 27th year in Cape Town.
My goodness me.
And then I was about 10 years in Johannesburg before that, before Keith and I came down to Cape Town.
And you were telling me just before we came to the studio that lovely story about you being one of the first people at the Waterfront before it became all sort of glamorous.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, when we were first offered the studio, we were down here doing two productions at the Baxter Theatre. And David Jack, who was then the MD of the Waterfront, came on the phone and said, I believe you would like to relocate to Cape Town. I thought it was a gag. I really did. I thought someone was having us on. And I went, yeah, sure, great, lovely idea. And he said, well, would you like to come in for a meeting tomorrow? So my late husband, Keith Galloway, and myself went in for a meeting in our shorts and flip-flops to be faced with about 8 or 9 men in suits yeah, round an oval table. We went, oh, my goodness, this is for real. Mm. And they were for real, offering us a premises at the Waterfront.
And this building, which apparently is now a heritage site, mm-hmm, is it? What was it? Tell me a little bit about the
building.
It
used to be the old mission to Seaman. Mm-hmm. They escorted us round the fledgling Waterfront at the time, showing us all sorts of different premises, none of which were suitable for a college for performing arts. And we were getting quite despondent because we'd been really excited about wanting to do this move to Cape Town.
Oh, so they didn't have this building in mind specifically at the beginning?
No, not at all. It was just part of a portfolio of buildings that they were showing us. Mm-hmm. And on the last day, we were due to go back to Joburg the following day, they showed us the old mission to Seaman. And we walked in and all we saw were these huge rooms, empty spaces, this glorious mahogany staircase going up the center. And we went, oh, my goodness, it's like Fame. It's like the Fame School.
Oh, yes.
And we just said, are you serious? Are you seriously considering that we can have this building? And they said, yes. It was derelict. It was in a shocking state. And they said, if you want it, it's yours. And we couldn't believe it. It was just a question of being in the right place at the right
Absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. And on the last day, I mean, you could have missed out completely.
Exactly.
Was it one of those experiences where, as you said, you walk in and you think, this is it.
Absolutely.
This is it. You feel a vibe.
You knew the minute you walked through the door that this is the place for a college of performing arts. It couldn't have been better.
And so you set up shop, so to speak.
Yep.
And now you were telling me also 27 years later, they're refurbishing it for you.
Oh, we've been so blessed. The building, being a heritage building, has tremendous restrictions on what we are allowed to do. And it's budget. I mean, it's money. To refurbish a building like this is a huge cost. I don't even want to go into it. I mean, if it was my building, I could never afford it. And completely out of the blue, last November, the Heritage Commission got involved. And they came in and they said, right, this building needs restoration. And we said, well, we know. And they went to the V&A with a whole plan of campaign of brand new windows, bespoke windows, which have to be bent and shaped to the correct curve. And the V&A said yes. And we couldn't believe it. So the place is going to be crawling with builders for probably close on a year. It's a huge project. And the roof's got to be redone. And they are restoring it back to its original colouring, which is cream with a red roof and green shutters. is going to look exactly like it did in 1904.
Because it's sort of bluish now, isn't
it? Yes, well, it's part of the V&A, which is all that kind of blue-grey. But this is going to be different, and it's going to go right back to the way it used to look in 1904. Gosh, so we're very excited.
What a wonderful thing to happen for you, to have this all done for you.
Exactly.
And to return a magnificent building to its original glory.
Yeah, and I'm so in love with that building. You know, I've worked hard on that building in all the years that we've been there, and internally spent a great deal of personal money on it because I'm passionate about the building itself. Mm-hmm. So to have someone on our side like this doing this is just incredible.
So what will happen during that year? Will you still run the school, or how will that
work? We have to, and we have to do all the examinations. But they're being very generous. What they're doing is they're giving us a complete plan of campaign so we know which studio is going to be renovated and at which time. So they're being very cooperative. And then we are also saying, well, sorry, we've got ballet exams on in that studio, so can we shift you to another one? So it's been a wonderful relationship up until now. And it's working. I mean, look, some of the windows are boarded up. But the students understand and the parents understand. And if we have visiting people who want to come and join the school, we say, look, we promise it's not always going to look like a building site. But everyone's being very cooperative.
It's a fairly big building, isn't it? I know you spoke about big rooms, but it's a double story, two-story.
It's a one, two, three, four. Four-story.
Four-story.
Yeah, and then there's another building on the campus as well, which is Art Deco. Okay. Which dates to 1947,
Gosh.
With not really Art Deco, but it's like they call it the first modernist building of the V&A. So that's also being restored back to its original
look. As part of your theatre.
As part of the theatre,
And talking of the theatre, it does have a theatre in it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. What we did was we deconsecrated the chapel, which was beautiful, because when they did the new mission to Seaman, they transferred the chapel itself and the organ down to the new premises on Duncan Dock. And then we had the chapel deconsecrated. And then I restored that chapel back to its origins again, with all the wood paneling and everything, because that was in honor of my husband, Keith Galloway. He always wanted a theatre space where the people didn't have to pay, basically, for young people to be able to put their work in there free of charge and to experiment. So the way the theatre works is that nobody actually pays for it. It's done on a 70-30 split.
Okay.
70% goes to the incoming production company, and 30% comes back to us for our bursary fund.
Oh, right, okay.
So if they make a bit of money, then we do, great, for the bursary fund.
Right.
If they don't, well, they're not actually losing anything. And Paul Griffiths, my business partner, myself, we're always on hand to give advice to new companies coming in and looking at their work and helping them develop it. So we're kind of the first port of call, really. And then it goes on to places like the Alexander Bar and maybe the arena here and to Grahamstown. But it's lovely because we give it that first leg up the ladder.
As it were.
Yes.
We'll have a little music break now, Delia, and then I want to talk about this musical, Spring Awakening. What's your first choice, Delia?
My first choice is America from West Side Story.
Oh, yes.
There is various reasons why. My husband, Keith Galloway, was the first dancer to ever be accepted into the Broadway production of West Side Story in London. I don't know if you remember, but Keith was 20 years older than me.
Yes,
so
I
he
do,
was
I
in
do.
The West End long, long before I was. And it was West Side Story was his passion. And just after we got married, they were casting the South African West Side Story here in South Africa. And they couldn't cast it at that time because there were not enough people for triple threats. So they cast it in London, America, and Australia. We both got into the show. We both came to South Africa for a year, and that's when we decided we wanted to stay. So West Side Story was instrumental in bringing us here and keeping us here.
And this is a wonderful excerpt. Let's listen.
Always the And the bullets fly.
Watch out!
I like the island and her.
I know you do.
Smoke on your pipe. People in each room.
Automobile in America, chromium steel in America, wires for wheel in America, very big in America.
I'll drive a Buick through San Juan.
If there's a road you can drive on.
I'll give my cousins a free ride.
How you get all of them inside?
Well, that exhilarating excerpt from West Side Story, America, and that incidentally is from the recording conducted by Leonard Bernstein on the DG label, quite in a cast as well, and it was the first choice of my guest, Delia Sainsbury, the founder and managing director of the Waterfront Theatre School, who's here to talk about Spring Awakening, the musical, which is about to open at the Artscape Arena. But Delia, you said as we were listening to that, you reminded me that it's quite a tricky piece to choreograph, isn't it, because of those cross rhythms. And remember that fantastic moment in the film as well that they did so well. I think Jerome Robbins.
It was choreography. Yep. It's a very complicated musically and account. So as dancers, we used to have to wait in the wings and be counting the whole time for our entrances on stage. It's very complex. But very challenging. And I mean, for a dancer, it's the ultimate musical. It really is.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. It's got everything in it. And this thing that Leonard Bernstein does even gives it a slightly operatic feel.
That's right.
But without losing its kind of earthiness. That's what I like about it. But the film was marvelous as well. Anyway, Before I continue talking about you and your life, I want to talk a little bit about the show that you're presenting, Spring Awakening, the musical. Mm. Tell me a little bit about it, because I've not heard of it, but apparently it's a huge hit.
Yes. It was a huge hit on Broadway. I mean, it won the Tony Award. It's won numerous awards. It's won a Grammy. It took Broadway by storm. It's a very controversial musical because it's about the sexual awakening of young people, but not just about that. It's about when they start to become aware that everything around them is not perfect and they start to question. It actually dates back to 1891.
Yes, I was intrigued by that.
Yes, and it was German originally. It was a play, rather sort of Brecht in its feel. It's about rebellion. And one of the reasons why we chose it is because there seems to be this move back towards conservatism now. And when you look at, for example, in America, there are now so many states now banning abortion again. And this whole move is becoming quite suppressive in a lot of ways. And the youth will always rebel. The youth are always pushing us forward. And it's a very relevant musical to the way young people feel today. And when you're running a theatre school, it's very interesting because you have to encourage that individuality. And you almost have to encourage that rebellion because they are the innovators of the future. So because we are all about creativity and finding a voice, this musical for us as a college is very relevant, and we think it's very relevant to today's youth.
Now, Delia, who wrote the music? Because I read somewhere that the score, the actual music score, was one of the most original or refreshing or enjoyable that had ever been written. I think it was Duncan Sheik. Duncan Sheik,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes. It says here that it was described as the most gorgeous Broadway score of the decade. The lyrics are by Stephen Slater. It originally opened in 2006, but the score is, again, brilliant. Mm. It's unusual, challenging, vocally very challenging. And our musical director, Garth Tavares, is doing amazing things vocally with the students. And it's a rock and roll score. It's totally anachronistic. And it's
youth rebelling, I suppose.
Well, the theme isn't, but the music against, for example, the costumes, which are barbarian in flavor with a punk look.
Can't imagine that.
Well, you have to come and see it. Yes. But what we've done is we've retained that original barbarian look and tried to hold on to that tradition again, but bringing it into modern day. It's got a very interesting slant. And what we've done with it is we haven't actually gone with any other previous version. We have re-examined the text and the whole thing. And Paul Griffiths has redirected it the way he visualizes it. Yeah. And he's an absolute genius anyway.
Yes, as we know from other things that he's done.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
And the music, is it? Are there sort of hit songs, like, you know, whenever you think of a show, you think of a hit song?
Yeah, there's Mother Who Bore Me is probably the most famous song. But when you hear it, you'll go, oh, yes, I know that. It's certainly not, it's not commercial. I mean, it's not commercial music per se, because, as I say, it's quite sort of Brecht in its feel.
So a bit of darkness.
It is quite, yes.
A bit of darkness.
It is. And very, very challenging.
Is it a sort of triple threat show?
Very much so.
Do the actors and actresses have to sing, dance, and act?
Yes. But the emphasis on this is much more on the vocal and the acting as opposed to the dancing. So it's not your Fame, not your West Side Story, not your Cats. It's much more of your Chess and your Rent.
Okay, now I see what you mean.
So, because musical theatre, obviously we talk about musical theatre as a sort of generalisation, but musical theatre is broad in its context now. Yeah. So you'll get your dancers show where they need to be able to simply, well, they need to be able to hold their own vocally. But then you'll get a very strong vocal show where they have to be able to move. My daughter Jenna Galloway has done the choreography for this. She's brilliant, although I say it myself.
No,
I'm a firm believer in nepotism.
But you have every right to
thank
be,
you,
Delia.
Thank you.
You really do.
And she's also come up with some very nice original concepts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think let's have another piece of music. Then we'll go on talking about you, your theatre, and the show. What is your next piece, Delia?
My next piece is Who Are You Now?, which is one of the lesser-known songs from Funny Girl.
Oh, yes.
Sung by Barbra Streisand. The reason for that is because I was in Funny Girl in London.
Oh, okay.
In my dim, distant youth. And this was my favorite song in the whole show. And as a very young 17-year-old, I used to stand in the wings and watch this woman every night sing this song and learnt so much from her.
Just watching
Just watching. And yes, I mean, I've been in awe of her my whole life, particularly when I was that age. So that's why I chose this.
Barbra Streisand, dare I say the inimitable Barbra Streisand. Who Are You Now? From that show Funny Girl, the second choice of my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio, Delia Sainsbury. And it only occurred to me, Delia, that when you said you were standing in the wings as a 17-year-old, it was actually listening to Barbra Streisand herself.
It was, indeed. Yeah.
What an experience that must have been for you to work with an icon like that.
I can't actually describe it because it was only my second show. I've been in Camelot for a while and then actually asked for my release from Camelot to go into Funny Girl, and the management agreed and allowed me to do it, which was incredible. And I was by far the youngest in the cast. I mean, I'd been out of Bush Davis, my theatre school, for about 6 months, I think. And I can't explain it to you. She was so brilliant, and she was an instinctive actress. She always said, I'm not a singer, I'm an actress who sings. And she connected with the lyrics. One of the things I remember about her particularly was when one of the young male members of the cast said to her one day, I think I want to be an actor. And she said, if you think you want to be an actor, darling, go and do something else.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Gosh, and she's still going strong, isn't she,
yeah.
really? Delia, you know, just let's talk about you a bit. You've spent a life in theatre, talking about 17-year-old on stage with Barbara Streisand. Do you come from a theatrical family? Where
Not
does this love of theatre come from?
Okay, well, a bit about my background
yes,
is I'm
please.
Actually adopted.
Oh?
And I was adopted when I was 10 days old, which is a whole other interview at another time.
Okay.
But I discovered, only when I was 45 years old, that my mother was a fine artist who used to have exhibitions all over Europe, and that her sister was an opera singer in Australia.
Good grief.
I was brought up by two absolutely amazing people, but my father was an engineer and my mother was a furrier. She made fur coats. Neither of them had any theatrical or musical background. But I'm a funny story. Okay. When I was very little, I won a baby beauty contest. I was actually a Johnson's baby. And one of the judges said to my mum, your little girl has the most amazing stage presence. She really needs to perform. I mean, I think I was barely born. And my mother said, okay, and did what every mother does and sent me along to a dancing school, and it actually turned out to be one of the finest schools in England for theatrical training. And the rest was history. All I ever wanted to do was to perform, and my parents supported me right the way through.
What I wanted to ask you, Delia, you said you discovered who your biological
yes.
mother was when you were 45.
Yeah.
When did you discover you'd been adopted?
Always. I always knew.
Oh, did you always know?
Yeah, it was my parents just always used the word, you are adopted, and you know your mother couldn't keep you, and she wanted to give us a present and all of that stuff, and you were the greatest present that she
oh,
could
good.
Give us.
Did you ever meet your mother?
I did, three times.
That must have been quite an experience. As you say, maybe another interview.
It's worth an interview on its own. So for anybody who kind of is adopted listening out there, it was quite an experience and a marvelous move forward in my life, I must say.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, and then how did you said you came out to South Africa with the man who was going to be your husband.
No, we were married then.
Oh, were you married then?
Yeah, South Africa was actually our honeymoon.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
When you came out for West Side Story.
West Side Story, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you just decided to stay.
We did. We went back to England for about 6 months and then did all we could to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Because Keith at that time was being offered work to choreograph for SABC television.
Ah.
And he wanted to come back. And I said, well, I don't know if I want to go back. And he said, well, let's go back for a year, see if it works out. If it doesn't work out, then we'll go back to the UK. And I don't know if you remember, but within 5 weeks, I had my own television show as a presenter. And again, it was the universe saying, this is where you're supposed to be.
You've been quite blessed, Delia. Quite
I know.
Blessed in your life.
Like I'm very aware
building.
Of that. Really aware of that.
What was that show called? I can't remember.
The first one I did was Compass,
yes,
which was
Compass,
based on
the
British Blue Peter.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which actually I'd done in England as a filler for somebody who was actually gone off on maternity leave. And when I arrived here, the assistant director had been the producer on Blue Peter in England. So there you go. You see, life
yes.
is... I don't know if you believe in coincidences. I walked into her office. She looked at me. I looked at her and I said, Anne Paul. And she said, Delia Sainsbury. I said, yes. And she said, oh, thank goodness I found someone that can do live presentation.
Good
and,
for you.
I mean, it was, and I'd been in the country 5 weeks.
Yeah, gosh. Mm. And then your next show, because you did a few, didn't you? I think, is the one I remember best.
Compass lasted a long time. And then Video 2,
Video 2.
Was the big one that lasted nearly 5 years.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I presented that with, first of all, Richard Loring, and then Paul Ditchfield, and Jonathan Rands, and then Martin Bailey.
Gosh, all great names.
Yeah, they were great male presenters, yeah.
And Jonathan Rands died tragically.
He did,
young,
sadly. Yes, he did.
And then what was the reason to come to Cape Town? You remember you said that you decided to relocate. Mm. You and your husband were down here.
Well, to be honest, it was political. I think at the time, Johannesburg was quite a dangerous place. And what actually happened was somebody put a bomb in a waste paper bin outside our studio, and there were a couple of people killed. It was during all of the sort of the change with the ANC and everything that was going on up there at the time. And we had two very young children. I think Joe was 6, Jenna must have been 3, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we had to make a decision because it wasn't becoming a comfortable place to live. And the offer, again, the offer to come down here coincided with our thought process at the time of what are we going to do? Because the country was in turmoil. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to go back to England because our affiliation lay here.
Yes.
And we were firm believers in utilizing our skills for the betterment of South Africa. It wasn't that we were here temporarily to run back as soon as there was a problem. And we were here to stay, but we didn't know how we wanted to be here to stay. And then when this opportunity came to move down to Cape Town, we felt that that was the right move at the time.
And that's when you came down to do a show at the Baxter
Theatre? Yeah, again, it was coincidental because we'd already booked to do 2 shows at the Baxter Theatre, which we would produce. And while we were down here, we were offered this premises at the waterfront.
My goodness me.
my life.
A blessed life, dear.
Yes.
Another music choice.
The next one is Autumn Leaves. And I've chosen the version by Nat King Cole. And the reason for this is because it's the song that my dad always used to sing to me to get me to sleep.
Okay, let's see the effect it has on us.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips, the summer kisses, the sunburned hands I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear old winter's song. But I miss you most of all, my darling, when autumn leaves start to fall. And soon I'll hear old winter's song. But I miss you most of all, my darling, when autumn leaves start to fall.
Nat King Cole, a voice that I've always liked, actually, Delia. He was singing Autumn Leaves, and the third choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note, Delia Sainsbury, who is the founder and managing director of the Waterfront Theatre School, and they are putting on this musical at Artscape Arena called Spring Awakening from the 10th to the 20th of July. But before we go back there, Delia, I want to just talk to you about your school. You're now established down here. You've been given this building, and the school seems to have been hugely successful. Mm. It seems though a number of people have passed through. You read in the little biogs.
That's right.
Studied at the Waterfront Theatre School.
That's it, yeah.
And how many people, tell me a little bit about the school. Are there people from all walks of life? Are they long courses? Mm. What happens there?
Okay. Well, we have a part-time school, which are the children, mm-hmm. and they start at the age of 5, and then okay. they go through to matric. And then we have a four-year tertiary course, which culminates in teaching qualifications and performing qualifications through the Imperial Society of Teachers of Dancing London and also through Trinity Guildhall. We have a resident staff of 18 teachers now.
18?
Yes.
This is a big operation.
It's huge, yeah. There's about 125 full-time students and about 200 children in the junior school. I'm a firm believer in the British system of training. There are two distinct methods, really, of training. There's an American system, which consists of modules, where the teachers tend to drop in, drop out. They use experts in their field, and they may do a term, and then they'll change them, and then they'll do another term. That has its benefits as top coaching. But to prepare people for the industry, I prefer a structured approach with examinations at the end of it, which are sequential. I'm also a firm believer in teaching qualifications because for me that is the long-term insurance policy, that even if you don't use them, you've got those qualifications that enable you to get into another country because you're not going to be a burden on the state. Eventually, if it's a girl, if she gets married, she has children, she can open her own studio or she can affiliate herself to another studio. So I think short-term, medium-term, and long-term with the training. Mm-hmm. And it's very much a triple threat. I mean, I know that's a very kind of buzzword these days. Yes. But we do raise all three genres to an incredibly high level of dance, drama, and vocal. And as I say, because we're in a structured system, it goes right up to licentiate, which has just been, it's credited as a level 7 in this country, which is just above the BA.
Oh.
It's intense. I mean, the classes are intense. We go from 9 o'clock until 4:30 nonstop. Then we have a break and then we start rehearsals and we can go through till 10 o'clock at night.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
And have you got a queue of people waiting to get in or do you have to battle to get people
no,
to come along?
No, thank you. We have never battled. We have about 5 sets of auditions a year. And we also do tour the country. Also auditioning in the various provinces now. Mm-hmm. We're very selective on who we take because it's a huge responsibility. We're giving these kids a future and we've got to make sure that we can give them a future. So for me, it's not about numbers. We only ever replace the number who are leaving. So if I've got, say, 25 graduates and maybe 5 or 6 have dropped out during the year, that would give us 31 places, let's say. So that's who we bring in. So okay. We can't expand. We can't get any bigger than we are now mm-hmm. because each student gets very individual training and individual attention.
Gosh. And the actual cross-section of people, do you get as many men or the boys coming in as much as the girls?
There's never as many. Lines? Yes. There's never as many male students as female because I think a lot of fathers particularly deter their boys from going into show business. Get yourself a proper job, you know. But yes, certainly across all the demographic lines, we fight very hard for bursaries. And we have a lot of brilliant African students. In fact, we've just taken 9 of them to Russia.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, we've just taken a drama company to Russia for the BRICS Drama Festival. All African students who had never been out of South Africa.
Okay.
And we fight hard to bring our African students in.
And are there positions for these people to go into? I presume there are people who might not actually go into show business.
Absolutely, yes.
That have benefited possibly from the experience and might end up teaching or whatever, but
yes.
who don't end up on stage possibly.
Well, it's a very diverse training. I mean, we've got people who start their own event companies. They work for agencies. They go into costume design. They go into stage management. I've got a lot of them recording, writing and recording their own music. Basically, what happens when a student comes to us, they say, this is what we would like our end product to be, and we do our very best to make sure they get there.
What is the youngest age someone can come to you?
Full-time?
Yes, full-time.
16. We don't mind if they don't do matric.
Oh, okay.
Because for us, you see, it's a very different system in the UK. You start school at 5.
Mm.
You do your O levels, and then you would go on to your vocational college if you're going to do vocational work. Here, we start school later, so the matric only happens at 18. But we're getting more and more young people going, this is what I want to do. It's a young profession.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're coming out with international qualifications, the fact they're not doing maths and science and biology is irrelevant because they're doing all the subjects which are relevant to performing arts.
To what they want to do with their lives.
Yeah.
Dear Lily, let's just pause for a moment for another piece of music. Rhapsody in Blue, well, that's 16 minutes long. So
it is.
Why don't we select something like the big romantic theme? But why have you chosen Rhapsody in Blue?
Because I was arrogant enough at the age of 16 in a choreographic competition to think that I could actually choreograph to it.
And did you?
I did. I won the competition, but bear in mind, it was a school competition, and I don't think there was probably much else competition.
Okay. Well, let's have a listen to just a short excerpt, a famous bit from Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue.
Thank you.
Just part there of that marvelous work by George Gershwin, Rhapsody in Blue, with Andre Previn there playing the piano and the London Symphony Orchestra, which he was also conducting. Delia Sainsbury is my guest, and we're approaching the end of the program all too quickly, Delia, because you have so much to say. I just want to say, before we go back to the play, you are not acting or singing at the moment anymore, are you? Are you full-time training? But I see you also train presenters for television.
I do.
You write for corporate events.
I do. Yes, yes.
Gosh, so you're quite a complete, busy gal.
It's a shift sideways, really.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you don't miss the sort of glamour of television and the stage.
Please tell me what is glamorous about television.
Point taken. Okay. Point taken. And then this show that you put on now, how did you cast it? Because I see they're mostly people from your school. Mm. You're not sort of using famous actors.
No, it is very much a college production. And we auditioned right across the board from first to fourth year. Our two professional actors are Shannon Faree and Matt Newman, who are brilliant. They're playing the adult roles in it. But the rest of the cast are from the school. Everybody had a chance to audition. We were very frank about the fact that it's a controversial piece and that there is some semi-nudity. So we had to get permission from parents to say that they could audition, and they were fully aware of the context and the subject matter of the show. We chose the best right from first to fourth year. So we do have some first years actually in the production.
Is it quite a big cast?
I'm trying to think. It's probably about 17.
Oh, that is? Mm. Well, that's a fairly big cast. Yeah. Because the other thing I was thinking, it's in the arena here at
Yes.
Artscape, which is that very intimate theatre.
That's right,
so
yeah.
The audience is very close to mm-hmm. you, very close to the stage actors.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that to the play's advantage, do you think?
Yes, I think
the
so.
Musical,
I think
say.
So, because it's a show where the audience is very involved in it. And to actually put them at a distance would actually, I think, be a disadvantage. Okay. So I think the intimate venue is going to suit it very well.
Is this the first production when it opens now at the arena? It's the first time you've done it in South Africa. You haven't done
yes.
anywhere else.
No, no. It has been done in Johannesburg some time ago. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that it's been seen in Cape Town.
Do you, at the Waterfront, do you try and do one major musical or show a year
yes.
or more?
We have about 5 productions a year. And we try to divide them between the various departments of dance, drama, and musical theatre. But we always do one major musical. And we're trying to veer away from the big stuff. When I say the big stuff, like The Sound of Music and Fame and all of that, because obviously you can't compete with major managements. And we don't intend to. We're not a management. So we're doing things which we can cope with financially. And also that are challenging for the students, because they're going to get all the big stuff when they graduate.
True.
So we need to give them the challenging things while they're still at college.
Okay. And most of the things you do, are they the sort of triple threat things,
yes.
the musicals? You don't do sort of just plain theatre.
We do. We present plays. Our plays are done in the first term. And then we have a choreographic competition for the dancers. Then we go into the musical. And then we have a big dance show, which is every year at the Mask Theatre in Muesenberg.
Oh, yes,
and that is created by our dance teachers.
Right. Okay.
So that every department in the school has a chance to show off what they can do.
Delia, it's been fascinating talking to you. I am so looking forward to the show and also to seeing your new building when it's painted, what, cream with green?
Yes, cream with a red roof and green shutters.
Okay, well, it's a fantastic building, which you see all the time when you go down that highway. But I've been talking to Delia Sainsbury, and that show, Spring Awakening, the musical, will be at the Arena Theatre. It runs until the 20th of July and presented by the Waterfront Theatre. What's your last piece, Delia?
My last piece is actually a song from Spring Awakening, and it's called The Song of Purple Summer.
Okay, is this like a hit from the show, or why have you chosen it?
It's the big sort of ending number of, it's very much a song of hope, and it's the youth saying, we will push life forward. So it's very much a kind of an anthem type song.
Okay. Delia Sainsbury, it's been fascinating talking to you. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Rodney.
And all shall fade, the flowers of spring, the world and all the sorrow at the heart of everything. still it stays. The butterfly sings and opens purple summer with the flutter of its wings. The earth will wave with corn. The gravefly choir.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Join me, André Schwartz, and Cuny de Villiers as we bring you Grenzenlos at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay. We've packed in all the hits, few surprises, and we know it's going to be a very special musical performance. So that's Grenzenlos from the 19th to the 21st of July. Oh no, not the 21st of July. We've sold out on Sunday. So it's 19th and 20th of July. Myself, Cuny, two grand pianos, and you at Theatre on the Bay. Book at CompuTicket now.
FMR.